Court. I'm Paul Roskin, here representing the appellant, Lauren Mason. This matter stems from a situation that probably occurs every day in the Commonwealth. My client was a passenger in a vehicle that was stopped by local law enforcement when the law enforcement officer observed a Fort Lee parking pass hanging in the window. The rear view mirror. He stopped the vehicle.
Your client was the passenger?
My client was the passenger, yes, sir. One thing led to another. Marijuana was found in the driver. My client was then detained as a passenger. He had been detained the whole time while they were investigating. And that led to certain drugs.
Let me ask you, right at the outset here, I mean, I'm very concerned about the underlying question in this case. But what standing does the passenger have to contest the suppression based upon reasonable, articulable suspicion having to do with this automobile?
Well, Judge, a couple of issues. Number one, the passenger has the same freedom of movement rights as a driver does. He was in the vehicle. He was, to the same extent the driver was, stopped and his movements and ultimately detained. He stands in the same shoes as the driver for the purpose of the stop, if not necessarily for other aspects.
I'm not sure that that's raised as an issue.
And it was not, Your Honor. The Commonwealth never raised it. The court never raised it.
All right. Well, go ahead and proceed.
Well, Your Honor, what happened in this case was the passenger was as a result of the stop, ultimately the passenger was, ultimately contraband was found in the rear of the car. That led to the case being brought against my client, who was the passenger, and he was ultimately convicted. At the trial, we filed a motion to suppress based on the basis of the stop being the parking pass that was hanging in the rearview mirror. At the time, the Commonwealth's witness, which was the officer who made the stop, testified and acknowledged the only basis for the stop was the parking pass hanging in the window. Motion to suppress was filed with the trial court, and the argument made was the officer did not have a reasonable suspicion to stop the vehicle based on the parking pass hanging in the window. The court first found that this was a warrantless search, so the Commonwealth had the burden to prove that that it was reasonable, and that burden was on the Commonwealth. Trial judge heard the evidence. He actually did a view of the scene and a view of the parking pass, and he determined unequivocally on the record that it did not obstruct the view. It did not obstruct the view. The officer himself, when he testified, basically never suggested that he even suspected that it obstructed the view. The officer never brought it up. The officer testified that, and there was never any facts presented as to how far the officer was from the parking pass when he observed it.
But is that relevant to the inquiry? Whether it actually obstructed the view, or there was a reasonable, articulable suspicion that it might obstruct the view?
It's relevant in this sense, Your Honor. You're correct. The standard, and that's what the court focused on, was the stop reasonable under these circumstances. The problem in this case is that we have not only the finding of the trial court that objectively did not obstruct the view, but we have the fact that the officer never presented any facts from which any court could conclude that it might obstruct the view, meaning he never said, I was so close that I saw it and it caused me concern for the passenger. And all he said is, I saw a parking pass, or I saw something dangling, and that led me to stop the vehicle. That was his entire testimony.
In fact, counsel, it's a fair reading from the record, isn't it, that he didn't even understand that the statute required not just something dangling from the mirror, but to actually obstruct the view of the highway.
That's correct, and that's one of the things the trial judge actually found. At one point, he said that this gentleman seems, quote, clueless as to what the law actually is. So not only do we have a situation where he didn't testify to facts which obstructed a view, because he was clueless, it's not clear that he would have been able to.
In other words, how could he have a reasonable suspicion of a violation of a statute if he didn't even know what violated it?
That's correct. And in addition, it would be impossible, I would suggest, to then post hoc kind of articulate facts from which a person could find some objective person reasonable. Because unless you have a camera there that's actually looking or something of that sort, it would be like me going into a room, and I don't speak French, listening to someone speaking in French and then trying to conclude, you know, what they were saying afterward. You might hear the words, but unless you're looking for a specific thing, you're not going to be able to sort it out in any meaningful way. And so we don't know, you know, the distances and so forth that someone might reasonably conclude. And that's what the trial judge found.
Well, you speak of the trial judge making findings, but he rather disavowed all of those later on, did he not?
No.
After he reconsidered the matter, he said it really doesn't much matter. The question really is, was there reasonable suspicion that some traffic infraction was taking place, regardless of what the officer thought, or how much time he had to observe the actual facts?
Yeah, Your Honor, what I believe he said, careful reading, is he later adopted the argument of counsel, which is essentially that any dangling object could give an officer reasonable suspicion to inspect. Now, the Court of Appeals disavowed that finding, and Judge Kelsey, in his opinion, specifically said, of course, we disagree with that, because that could mean any officer at any time could stop anyone when seeing a dangling object and then to see if it obstructs a view. That would subject every single person who had something hanging to being stopped, when in fact that having something hanging, whether it's a parking pass or whether, let's say, it's a tassel, whatever it is, unless it obstructs a view, unless it's is perfectly legal. So it would basically,
the statute actually says obstructs the clear view. Right?
It does say clear view, but again, there was nothing in the record to suggest that the officer had reason to believe it obstructed clear view. The only thing we know is the officer saw something dangling and made a stop based on his understanding of the law.
Well, the officer did later, on examination, a leading question, I think, was asked, could this have actually obstructed a clear view? And he said, yes, ma'am, it could.
And that was his conclusion. And the trial judge, after independently looking at it, said it would not. But the greater issue is, what did he observe at the time? And the answer is, we don't know. I mean, there were other cases where officers saw something at 10 feet or 20 feet or 30 feet, followed the vehicle, and were able to formulate an opinion, yes, that obstructed a view, and that's why I stopped him. In this case, there was the finding in the trial court that he was clueless. And so now he's kind of post-fact saying, well, I guess it could obstruct a view. Well, we don't know what he saw prior to the stop. We don't know how close he was and so forth, because he wasn't even looking for that. He wasn't even considering that threshold issue.
Part of the dilemma that you have and that I have is that I don't think a police officer, and I don't know of any case that would say this, has to know the every element of an offense and have reasonable, articulable suspicion that every element, in fact, has made its presence known in this case. It's reasonable, articulable suspicion that criminal activity, or in this case, an ordinance, I guess, or easily certainly a traffic offense, has occurred. So it's not microscopic; it's macroscopic, if you will. And that's the dilemma. And while I understand your argument, I'm not sure that that's necessary.
Well, I think the distinction, Your Honor, would be this. I mean, you're correct. If a police officer had some suspicion that out of the ordinary illegal activity of some type was taking place, but in this case we have an officer who actually believes that any dangling object is illegal.
Well, there are a lot of lawyers don't know the law either. That happens quite often in the course of a week sitting here. But having said that, we don't expect all the police officers in the land to know every element of every offense. It's not their job, particularly when reasonable, articulable suspicion is the standard. So I recognize your argument. I'm just not sure that it is a compelling one.
Judge, I think the Supreme Court, although the actual case came out the other way, the Hine case, which recently came out, drew a distinction between saying officers aren't expected to know every detail of the law. However, they're not to be excused for what Justice Roberts called a, quote, sloppy study of the law. And I would suggest that if your job every day is to be on the highway monitoring progress, or monitoring vehicles on the highway, then I don't see how.
Well, we don't have a subjective view of reasonable, articulable suspicion. We have an objective view of it. Isn't that the case law?
Well, we do, Judge, but the problem is that in this case, we don't have any objective facts from which the officer could find other than he saw a dangling object. And if that's the ruling, then that means any officer at any time who sees any dangling object would be free to stop and investigate, which would make every person in the Commonwealth subject to being stopped for an officer to investigate.
No, well, not every person in the Commonwealth. Only the people that have things dangling
in their
rearview mirror, which is bad enough. I mean, I see high school kids all the time running down the road in June with their tassels from their hats dangling from rearview mirrors. It seems rather innocuous to me. And it seems unfortunate that would give a police officer the right to stop them and to determine what else might be wrong about that prospect. It's also disturbing to me that parking pass is the exact size, given a millimeter or two, of the kinds of things you affix to your windshield so you don't have to pay cash for your tolls. It's the exact size of an inspection sticker. And the whole thing bothers me, but I have to deal with it in the context of actual case law that has been passed, and you might want to save some of your time here.
I will.
I do have one question. Now, you rely upon Hine, and Hine would appear to be factually distinguishable. So let me explain why I think that, and then please respond. The officer believed that there was a violation of law. And he was mistaken, that there wasn't a law dealing with that situation. He saw clearly a faulty brake light and thought, oh, that violates the faulty brake light statute of North Carolina. Turned out he was mistaken. There wasn't a statute that he could rely upon. In this instance, the officer knew there was a statute, just didn't know all the particulars of the statute. Is that a sufficient distinction? Or
I think in this case, his knowledge was completely the opposite of what the statute is. It has to obstruct the view. If you believe...
But a dangling object may violate the statute. In Hine, what he observed could not possibly violate a statute because there was no statute.
Well, that's correct. But what the court was getting at is that you can't... Your ignorance of the law cannot allow you to escape that.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Judge, I think I've run out of my rebuttal time.
Well, you may have. We'll see.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Kathleen Martin for the Commonwealth. The thing that we need to focus on in this case is that it's not a subjective test in terms of what the officer, this particular officer, was focusing on, but it is a reasonable, objective police officer, and whether or not, under the circumstances, a reasonable, objective officer could have stopped this car to investigate whether, in fact, the parking pass did clearly obstruct the view of the driver through the windshield.
Ms. Martin, why doesn't, we've talked about Hine a couple of times, why doesn't Hine resolve this in the passenger's favor? As I understand Hine, reasonable suspicion arises from the combination of an officer's understanding of the facts and his understanding of the relevant law. And then Justice Kagan gave what I think is a very clear recitation of when is an understanding of the relevant law a violation of the Fourth Amendment and when it's not. And she says that the statute is genuinely ambiguous, such that overturning the officer's judgment requires hard interpretive work, then the officer has made a reasonable mistake of the law. The facts in Hine obviously being one brake light out of a series of brake lights in one statute and then another statute saying defective equipment is a violation, very similar to Virginia's law. But so in that case, the officer's dealing with two statutes that seem to perhaps conflict with each other. But here we have a statute which pretty clearly says that the dangling object has to have to be, at least be reasonably thought to obstruct the view or could obstruct the view. And it's the last part of that the officer does not recognize as being part of the law. So why, under those facts, is his understanding of the relevant law not reasonable, therefore making the stop not reasonable?
Well, I think for one thing, Your Honor, is that's focusing so much on what the officer testified to. Now, it may be that he didn't fully understand the law, or it may be that he just was nervous and he didn't testify very well. But I think that we are looking at what a reasonable, objective officer would do. And the thing is that in seeing this parking pass, and what the officer testified to was that he was on Highway 460 in Waverly. He saw the car coming down the hill, and then he stopped it about a quarter of a mile up the road. Now, it may be that all the parties in the courtroom sort of knew exactly where this was, and it's not reflected in the record. But in any event, that's not really that important. The important thing is that as the trial court ultimately found at the second suppression hearing, and his findings are on page 101 through 106 of the appendix, is that it's not so much, you know, did this actual parking pass obstruct the view, but was there reasonable suspicion to think that it could have obstructed
and
the view?
Totally agree with you. Totally agree with the trial court. But Hine tells us if his understanding of the law is not reasonable.
And I think what I would say, Your Honor, is that I don't think that you can say that the officer's understanding of the law was unreasonable in this point. That his mistake about exactly what was involved was a reasonable interpretation, and that therefore under Hine, which talks about that a reasonable mistake of law is not a Fourth Amendment violation, and there's language there that a reasonable mistake gives police fair leeway to enforce laws for the community's protection. And certainly the purpose of this statute is that we want drivers to be able to see where they're going. And so it would be reasonable for an objective officer to see something that is dangling and stop the car to determine whether, in fact, it actually does. Now, in this particular case,
we're not disagreeing about that at all. I totally disagree with you, but where the officer does not know that it has to have the potential to obstruct, he just thinks it has to dangle. Isn't that problematic?
Well, I think again, in this particular case, it becomes too subjective that we have to look at what an objective officer would do, that that's what the Fourth Amendment concentrates on, is that the police have to be reasonable and you consider all the circumstances and you look at an objective officer. And in this particular instance, it may be that Officer Richards was wrong in what he thought the statute required. But again, he did say he stopped the car for a dangling object. He didn't really expound on that. But then he was asked on page 31 of the appendix, well, isn't it possible that this could obstruct, the parking pass could obstruct? And he said, well, yes, it is. And the court determined that it did hang down below the rearview mirror. And so I think that we concentrate on all those facts and we look at it objectively and reasonably.
Counsel, can I interrupt you a second? Can I ask you, maybe I ask it this way. It seems to me that the officer had come into court and said, I saw something that made me reasonably believe or reasonably suspect that there was a dangling object that was blocking the clear view. That would certainly have been a reasonable and articulable suspicion.
Right.
But that's not what he said. Essentially, what he said was, I saw an object. Now, that does not, I don't believe, provide a reasonable articulable suspicion that there's been a violation of the statute. Now, he certainly could have formed that, but he didn't.
And I understand that. And certainly, if he had said, and I thought it blocked the view or something like that.
I suspected it did. I just suspected it did.
Right. We'd have a much different case. But if we are looking at the total picture here in terms of objective officers, an objective officer probably would have added those magic words. And so I think that if we're looking just so much at what this officer did, and as we pointed out...
Let me just say one more time. Then if what you're saying is correct, I understand the difference between objective and subjective, but does that write articulable completely out of the test?
Well, no, it doesn't. It doesn't really write it completely out of the test. But I do think that then, I mean, the officer did say at one point that it could obstruct.
But I think that was after the fact when
he didn't say that initially. And as I said, you know, maybe he was just nervous and inept at testifying. He hadn't been properly prepared. I mean, we don't know those facts. And
so
we've got bad facts, and here we are.
Is there a substantive difference between articulable and articulated?
I think there is, Your Honor. And certainly, so he did not articulate, but there still could have been a reasonable objective officer, there could have been articulable facts because we do have this parking pass that hangs down.
The officer must be able to articulate more than an unparticularized suspicion. This officer could not have articulated more because he didn't think there was more.
Well, he may have. It's kind of like, you know, if there had just been different questions, different testimony, we could have had a different result. We have the facts are what they are. I can't change the facts. I can't change what he said.
Isn't the question, would a reasonable officer have been able to articulate if that officer had known all of the elements of the law?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. That's the point. And I would like to talk just a moment about something that Justice Lemmons talked about, and that is that this employee pass, the parking pass, which it's, I think, on page 192 of the appendix, is about, you know, 3x5 kind of thing, that is an inspection sticker. There are certain regulations that, you know, the inspection sticker goes down at the bottom of the windshield, and the transponders go behind the rearview mirror, and they also are a little smaller. So there are certain places where those are placed. Now, if either one of those things were somewhere else on the windshield, you know, they could also provide a reason that you would want to investigate whether or not they're blocking the view. If you look at the handicap pass that people have, which is slightly larger, but still, that particular statute, 46.2-1241E, says that no placard shall be displaced from the rearview mirror while the vehicle is in motion. And so, you know, clearly if you look at that statute and then you sort of compare it to this obstructing the clear view, you know, it's the intent that you don't want things hanging down that people can't see out their windshields. And this parking pass, because of where it's placed on the rearview mirror, if you're in your car, it's at eye level, and particularly if you go to the right or you look up, you know, you're going to see this. There's a big difference between a piece of dental floss that you might hang off your rearview mirror and a rope that's maybe an inch or so in diameter. I mean, it's just, there's a difference in the
eyes. The factual predicate, just briefly, we do that because we want to get to the legal question, and I know you're very familiar with that. Suppose you have an officer that says, I stop everybody who has something dangling from their rearview mirror because I know that's part of the statute. I know what the statute says. So I have reasonable, articulable suspicion that the statute might have been violated, and I have to stop them in order to find out whether it's in a clear violation. We're not stopping because they have a violation. It's a reasonable, articulable suspicion that there might be. So is the Commonwealth's position that even that officer would be lawful in making a stop?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because there are many cases that if an officer says that, and the Brown case, which I think is from the Seventh Circuit, maybe talked about this some, that if the officer's saying, well, it is my policy to do this regardless, that's not really the same thing.
No. It may be his policy, but what he's acting on what he thinks is lawful, and that's what I'm asking you. He says, I stop everybody because I believe it's lawful. Forget the policy business. I stop everybody that has something dangling from the rearview mirror because I know, at least one aspect of this statute, of the elements of the crime. I have to actually get up closer to be able to see if the other aspect of it has been violated. And I can't do that from sitting on the side of the road. I do know it's dangling, but I don't know the rest of it. Is the Commonwealth's position that that's proper?
I don't think I can say a blanket yes or no, Your Honor, because I think that you'd need a few more facts to know what the object is. Is it reasonable that this object is going to block the view? I mean, you have to look at the whole statute, what the language is, that it's not just a dangling object, but one that blocks the clear view of the driver. And
well, it's something that is large enough to be seen by an officer on the side of the road, so it's not dental floss. All right? Having said that, is it the Commonwealth's position that if that's large enough for him to see it dangling from the rearview mirror, that the officer is proper and correct in having reasonable, articulable suspicion to stop to allay his suspicions that it might obstruct vision?
And I think that if the officer says that it's large enough to be seen and that it's a very fine line, because on one hand, I don't think that we can say that you can just stop anybody for any reason. And that's a problem with this particular case.
Of course it is. And the other problem is, and it's the unspoken problem, it can be used very selectively by police officers.
Right. And that's a legitimate concern. But I think on the other hand, that if an officer sees, we have the statute, the officer sees an object that dangles, and he may not be able from where he is initially to tell whether or not it does obstruct. And so it does give him some reasonable suspicion to stop to investigate. And then sort of, it just kind of depends on what happens from there in terms of where the case goes.
Counsel, can I ask you a separate question? Do you take issue with the appellant's argument that those states that have interpreted this have required that law enforcement actually have to have a reasonable and articulable suspicion that there was actual obstruction? Is that the case law, or do you disagree with that?
I know that there are several cases, and I think that in my brief I've cited a case, I think, from Vermont, and there's a footnote in that case that they have many cases that would go along with the Commonwealth's position and many cases in a separate footnote that would not. And so right off the top of my head, I can't recall exactly what those other cases state.
I guess my question is, do you disagree with him when he says it's a majority?
I don't know that it's a majority, but
okay,
I do know that there are other states that would find for the defendant.
Okay.
Just as there are some other states that would go along with the Commonwealth's position.
But putting aside the whole body of law on pretext, so is my understanding of your argument that we look at the nature of the object, and if the nature of the object is such that it might satisfy the statute, then we disregard the officer's knowledge of the law or lack thereof, this individual officer's.
I think that the nature of the object is certainly an important consideration. I mean, I think that, you know, going forward in the future, that police officers would be wise to be more articulate in saying exactly what they thought.
I don't think
thought.
It was a matter of articulation, counsel. I really don't think he knew. I don't think it was he was nervous and misspoke. I really don't think that this particular officer knew based on this staff, based on this record.
Well, that's just where we are. I don't want to come across, and I see that my time is up, but I don't want to come across as saying that this is sort of a per se kind of thing, because I think that just creates a whole new set of problems. And so I don't want to be in that position. But on the other hand, I do think that a reasonably, objectively view, you have to have, a police officer has to have some way of, if he sees an object and he needs to investigate that, he needs to be able to stop the car. And for that reason, we'd ask that this conviction be affirmed.
All right. Mr. Roskin, this is your lucky day. She got 30 extra seconds. You get 30 extra seconds.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that the one point that again, I come back to, I think that everyone is struggling with is the objective versus subjective considerations, or the concept of the object itself versus the officer's suspicion. And I think the one thing that, again, we keep missing, that, or the Commonwealth is not articulating, and I think what was brought out in Officer Humphrey's in the dissenting opinion, Justice Humphrey's and Judge Humphrey's and four other judges.
And now your time has expired. Thank you very much.